This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. This is episode 6 of the podcast, and now that the NHL trade deadline has come and gone, we can start looking ahead to other events on the hockey calendar. For today, that means the World Cup of Hockey. I'm Ian Denemy, and today, along with Matt Larkin, Ryan Kennedy, and Ken Campbell of the Hockey News, we'll talk about some of the biggest snubs and surprises after the 8 teams unveiled their 16-player rosters on Wednesday. We'll also be joined by former NHLer and Sportsnet analyst Corey Hirsch to get his take on the World Cup rosters and who he thinks might be able to knock off Canada.
Okay, so big World Cup announcements the other day. The teams trotted out 16 names, and they will name 7 more as we move forward. There was a lot of interesting names on the lists, and let's start off with early snubs. Obviously, a lot of these players will make the final cut, but it's interesting to see who was initially put on and who was initially left off. Some of the more intriguing names, Corey Perry was not named for Canada. Same with Brent Burns, David Backes for Team USA, Dougie Hamilton for the under-23. So guys, who are you thinking in terms of these snubs? Who surprised you the most?
Well, to me, the obvious name that jumps out, I look at the Sweden page, and I think there's been a lot of uproar, and I think it's very justified over John Klingberg not making the team. To me, it's what does a guy have to do to make a team? It's to me, a bit ludicrous. He's been dominant. He's great at both ends of the ice. He's a great offensive defenseman. He's shown great clutch ability. He scores so many goals in overtime. And I know Nicholas Cronwall is a great veteran player, but Cronwall's a bit over the hill. He's 35 years old. I would have at least let Cronwall have the summer, maybe even to decide if his body's ready, and give it to the young set of legs. Now, all of a sudden, with Sweden, you have one spot left because they named 6 defensemen. You have one spot left for Jonas Brodin, Hampus Lindholm, and John Klingberg, which to me is a bit of a problem.
Well, I think Klingberg will get that spot, and if Eriksson decides over the summer that he can't play, then he'll definitely get that spot. I think it speaks to the depth that Sweden has on defense, and the fact that this team might be the prohibitive favorite going into the tournament because of that. But yeah. For me, I think it speaks more to the level of defense that you've got in Sweden and the fact that they're so stacked on the blue line. I think it speaks to that more than anything else.
Yeah, speaking of blue lines, Canada is obviously very intriguing because, Brent Burns, who's having a fantastic season in San Jose, was not in the initial. They named 4. He was not there. And then PK Subban as well, always a lightning rod, whether you love him or hate him. He was not named there. I was trying to parse what GM Doug Armstrong was saying yesterday at the press conference in terms of, he spoke about Canada coach Mike Babcock being a big fan of reliability because you cannot hide players in this tournament. I couldn't help but wonder if Subban was the target of that comment or if it was just more of a generalized comment. But that's going to be an interesting one because, I mean, Subban was in Sochi but had a very minor role on that Canadian team. And I think what we saw, with the 4 names that did get it, all of those guys were in Sochi, played big roles. Doughty, Weber, Keith, Vlasic. You still got to get Brent Burns in there. Brent Seabrook is still out there. Alex Petrangelo. There's so many options for the Canadians. I kind of wouldn't be surprised if Subban got snubbed, even though it would be a shame because this sort of stage seems to be perfect for his exploits and his personality.
Well, he may very well end up being the guy that's snubbed, and I do think it comes down to the trust factor. I think that's one thing that gets underestimated a lot in hockey is how much a coach trusts a guy. And a guy like Mike Babcock or any other coach is going to go with players he trusts. And especially in a short tournament where he's not going to have a lot of time to prepare, where he's not going to have a lot of time to have a real impact on the team, I think, in a situation like that, he's going to have to go with guys he trusts. And who better to trust than the 4 guys that he picked? The guys who were in Sochi, who were part of what might have been the most dominant defensive team we've ever seen at any level ever. Mm-hmm. That team was incredible. Like, it was so incredibly dominant as a defensive force. Like, I don't know that Sweden would have too many more goals if they were still playing right now. Yeah. I mean, that team just wasn't giving up any goals. And I remember thinking after the tournament, this is really weird. You know, I can count, I can see in my mind's eye every single goal the Canadians gave up in this tournament. And I can describe every single goal. There were that few of them. So I think that has a huge, huge amount to do with it. And it could leave him on the outside looking in, because, like, who are you going to take off? Like, is Doug Armstrong, who's the GM of that team, going to snub Alex Pietrangelo twice? You know, we saw what that did with Steve Yzerman and Martin Saint-Louis. So I very well think that, you know, I mean, like, PK's got the rest of this year. He won't have a playoff, in all likelihood. He won't have a playoff to showcase himself. So if he makes his team, I think it'll be another Sochi situation where he's going to be one of the sort of extra guys that, you know, might get pressed into service but might not.
And it's a great point, and I do think we're going to see a lot of that reliability bias. One of the interesting exceptions to me was no Corey Perry, even though I do expect we will see him. But the inclusion of Tyler Seguin to me was interesting. He's a guy that's sort of, you don't want to say blacklisted, that's too strong a word, but there have always been sort of these character issues that have followed him throughout his career because he lives that sort of single guy party lifestyle. So to me, it was a pleasant surprise to see Seguin get his due and be named to the sort of more prestigious, the Sweet 16 roster, not just the final 23-man roster. And to me, it's because Seguin has just been too good to be ignored any longer. He's one of the top 5 or 10 offensive weapons on the entire planet, has a great goal scorer's release, and who knows what you can do with Seguin. He's a guy who can play center or wing, and maybe you give him a try with an elite passing center like a Sidney Crosby and watch him light the lamp over and over. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, do you win with him, though? I'm not 100% sure you do, and I mean, we'll find out, right? Because you know, he'll be a big part of the team going forward, so if they win, then he'll have some winning on his resume. But I think that's where, you know, a lot of people might have thought that, you know, you'd go with a Corey Perry. Like, the guy's won at every level, everything at every level. And I think that, you know, I don't understand the Corey Perry omission, to be honest with you. I realize that he didn't get off to a great start, but he's been dynamite lately. And he's won, and he knows how to win, and he plays big in big games, and I think that was a real omission. I mean, sometimes they're not omissions. Like, sometimes it's just the guy, you know, just you have other guys there that you can't justify putting a guy ahead of some of those guys. In this case, I feel it was a real omission to not have him on the team.
Yeah.
And
even among the top 16. Who knows how he's going to take it? Corey Perry, you know, if he's the Corey Perry we all seem to know and seem to see, he's going to be a guy that probably doesn't give a crap and will just go out and keep playing great. And
maybe he plays harder even. Plays the chip on his shoulder.
And all that. So I think that, you know, I think he's going to be part of this team. And, you know, but I mean, like Peter Shirelli was saying, you know, I mean, Patrice Bergeron came within a hair of not making the Sochi team. Like, it was very, very, very close. And he ended up being one of their best players. So I don't see any reason why Corey Perry wouldn't do something of the same thing, given his pedigree.
And you know what? I get the sense that, particularly with Canada, they were only allowed to name 16 players. I get the sense that they've already slotted most of those other roster spots. And, you know, really what we're looking at is there's probably maybe 2 or 3 positions that are actually being jockeyed for right now.
Yeah. What about Phil Castle with the U.S., eh, guys?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's surprising to me. He's, you know, say what you want about Kessel being high maintenance or anything like that, but he's still, you know, got elite goal-scoring ability. And in Sochi, he scored 5 goals for the Americans in 6 games. And, you know, on a team that, you know, kind of needs goal-scoring, it's surprising to see him left off in favor of someone like Justin Abdelkader.
Well, I think that's where... And Dean Lombardi said it in his news conference the other day. You know, they've set their sights squarely on Canada. They think Canada is a team to beat. And you can you might want to question that strategy. Like, if they're building themselves to just beat Canada, then maybe, you know, maybe they won't get far enough to beat Canada and they'll lose to someone else. But I think it's just a matter of, again, can you win with this guy? I'm not convinced you can. Like, I'm not, like, personally, I'm not a huge Phil Kessel fan. Never have been, probably never will be. But he's a guy that, if I'm going into battle, I just look over and it's like, I don't want to be in a foxhole with that guy.
But I got a stat for you here, Ken. I got a stat for you. I got a stat. This might throw you off, but we'll see. Phil Kessel has played 22 playoff games in his career. He has 13 goals. 13 goals and 21 points in 22 playoff games. He's a guy who gets a bad rap. But in big games, he also has he had 5 goals in 6 games in Sochi.
And he had 0 goals when they needed it. But I will give you the caveat that he had a lot of company. He was terrible in the semifinal. He was terrible in the bronze medal game. But he had a lot of company. But it was that was the time when I think everybody was looking to Phil Kessel to really step it up and to show that he could be a leader and to show that he could carry a team. And he failed miserably. He was not good in those games.
And this might be a good time to transition to sort of the other side of the coin, which is the early surprise additions. Now that we're talking about Team USA, Justin Abdelkader, the most obvious name. And for me, this isn't so much about Justin Abdelkader as a person, so much as Justin Abdelkader as a concept. I have a problem with teams, and the Americans do this a lot, where they start to think. And I think that's the worst thing they can do. We've seen it in the past, even with the World Juniors this year. Both Canada and the USA, I thought, overthought themselves out of either a medal or a higher medal with either the way they put the teams together or the way they coached them. We saw it with Russia at the last Olympics where they had an entire line of KHLers. Those guys got smacked down. Of course they did, because they're in the KHL playing against NHL competition. And I feel like we're seeing this again with the Americans where, you know, they were saying, I believe it was Lombardi at the press conference yesterday, that Justin Abdelkader is hard to play against. And that's fine if it's, you know, a Tuesday night in February in the NHL, but Sidney Crosby doesn't care that he's playing against Justin Abdelkader. Erik Karlsson's not going to go rush up the other side of the ice to avoid Justin Abdelkader. This is best on best. Why would you just not take the most elite players you have? Like, Team USA is at that point now where they can make decisions. I can understand 10, 15 years ago where, you know, you had to take Jim Slater because Jim Slater's from America and you need 23 roster spots. But, I mean, that's not the case now. And, you know, we didn't see David Backes on the early 16. And, you know, I don't think that's egregious by any stretch of the imagination, even though he is a tough guy to play against and pretty elite and has always been there for the Americans. But that's sort of my mini rant. Is any time, and Canada has done it too, you know, with guys like Draper at the Olympics before, where they want to go top six, bottom six. It's like, why don't you just have 4 number one lines? You have that luxury.
And I agree with that logic completely. And to me, it applies to an opinion of mine about the Team North America, the Young Stars team. I personally would not have named Sean Couturier to that preliminary 16-man roster. And I'm sure that's an unpopular opinion because he's a great pick to be a captain. He's a great two-way forward. He's got good grit. He's going to be the oldest player on the team. But by the same logic, in a best-on-best tournament, you don't want specialists. You want skilled players who can do everything well. And I don't know why you pass up a Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a guy who's a very underrated two-way player but can also score a fair amount in favor of Couturier.
They addressed that yesterday, and they said, you know, we're going to take some penalties in this tournament, and we need a guy to kill penalties, which is exactly why they took Sean Couturier and why they would have maybe taken, you know, maybe made the decisions that they made. And, I mean, the Nugent-Hopkins thing is a really interesting thing, too, because Peter Chiarelli's in the same boat as Doug Armstrong was with Pietrangelo and Steve Yzerman was with Martin St. Louis, you know, turning down his own guy. But he said, you know, his level of play just isn't where it should be to be amongst this group. You know, I don't know, guys. These guys are some of the smartest men in hockey. And I don't know. I think they know quite a bit more about these players than we do. And I talked to Shirelli about this, and he said, you know, they relied really heavily on analytics in terms of who was getting, you know, the fewer offensive zone starts, more defensive zone starts, the quality competition. They really looked at that, and they looked at the guys who were playing against the harder players to play against, and those were the guys that they were going to bring in, and those were the guys that they were going to put on this team. So, I mean, you got to build a team too. Like, you can't just, I suppose you can have four lines of first liners and just tell people to take different roles and expect a guy who's usually a scorer to kill penalties. But when you have no time to prepare and you got to put a team together really quick, sometimes you do need those guys. And I agree, sometimes there are too many of those guys, but to have one or two of them around, I don't really have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with them having Sean Couturier, because, I mean, he's been named now, but if he doesn't prove to be good enough to hang with these guys, then he'll be the 13th forward and he'll be spotted in and out of the lineup. So I think at some point you got to build a team. You can't just put together an all-star team, because I don't think that's the answer in these tournaments either, is to just put together a whole bunch of great players who can dangle, because, you know, I mean, the unfortunate reality is a lot of these games are predicated on defense, and these guys would just get killed if they turned it into a track meet. So, I don't know. I think you got to build a team too. So,
I think this is one where, Kenny boy, you and I are going to agree to disagree. I think the best players are players that can do anything, and I think if you look at any team in the NHL, if ice time is unlimited, if players never got tired, the best guys on every team would be killing penalties. Remember how good Paul Kariya and Timo Salani were in Anaheim about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, killing penalties? Because in that situation, the Ducks decided to put their best players out there. If you're able to spare them, and on in a best-on-best tournament, you are able to give elite players that kind of ice time, then why not use them?
Yeah, and I see the same thing. I mean, you know, Patrice Bergeron, he's going to be on Canada's roster regardless, you know, because he is a fantastic two-way player. Pavel Datsyuk, same deal. You can have him kill penalties. Henrik Zetterberg for Sweden. How amazing would it be where it's like, oh, we got to kill a penalty. How about Henrik Zetterberg? Yeah, that'll do the trick. I think that when you have the breadth of talent that these power countries do now, and I put the U.S. in that category, you don't need to specialize that much. You can have a better player who still does the same thing, and maybe they're, you know, maybe they're a bit behind Abdelkader in, or a player such as Abdelkader in certain categories, but they're far above what he can do in other categories, particularly on offense.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, we're talking about one guy here. It's not like they've brought a whole bunch of pluggers and figure they're going to slow the game down. This is one guy. You know, and one guy isn't going to make that huge a difference. You know, I mean, I you know, and we're not talking about, you know, Rob Zaminer here on the 98 Olympic team. Justin Abdelkader is a pretty good player who can do a lot more things than I think Rob Zaminer could ever do as an NHL player.
Yeah. Well, that's what they said about Rob Zaminer at the time.
What's that?
That's what they said about Rob Zaminer back then. Rob Zaminer is a good player.
No, I thought it was a horrible pick at the time.
Well, not you.
A million years later, I still think it was a horrible pick.
But obviously, Team Canada's brain trust.
Where they were just trying to prove they were smarter than everyone else.
Which is exactly my point.
I can see the point here. I can see it. It's just, it's one guy. It's not like they've brought a whole bunch of guys like this. It's one guy. And you know what? In a short tournament where, you know, you have guys that, you know, are going to be playing, a lot of guys who are going to be playing out of their own roles to start with, I don't think you want too many guys that are going to have to play out of their comfort zone. And, you know, if you can have a guy like that who's going to kill a penalty for you late in the game and maybe win one game for you, then maybe it justifies having him on the team.
Well, it wouldn't be an international tournament if we didn't get to judge and second-guess and nitpick every single roster selection for every single team.
Yes.
So let's move on and talk about the medal favorites. Maybe it's obvious. Maybe there's some dark horses. Who do you guys like as the top three?
Well, I mean, to me, it's a two-horse race. I think Canada and Sweden remain head and shoulders above everyone else. And the big reason is they have something no one else has, which is elite, elite, elite defense. I think the U.S. has caught up a lot, and that's why I think the U.S. is the third best team. But both Canada and Sweden have multiple Norris caliber top 10 defensemen in the world. Your Erik Karlssons, your Victor Hedmans, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Shea Weber, Drew Doughty, Duncan Keith. There's no other country that can match what those two teams have. And for that reason, I think we'll see Canada and Sweden in the final again, rematch of Sochi.
Yeah, I would go with the same top two. And my sort of X factor would be Team USA with Jonathan Quick in net. They could they only have to win a couple of games to get to that final series. And if Quick gets hot, he could easily post, you know, back-to-back shutouts in a three-game series if he had to, or give up, you know, one goal on 35 shots and do it for them. So the Americans would be my quote-unquote dark horse, even though, you know, it's an eight-team tournament and they're already one of the favorites. But I would go Canada, Sweden, U.S.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd love to go off the board here, guys. I really would. But in every best-on-best tournament from now until eternity, Canada should be the number one seed, and they should win them all. Canada should win this tournament because Canada. That's all. No, yeah. But I mean, like, you look at the resources, you look at the number of players. Like, and I look at, like, the measuring stick is, you look at the other teams and you even the U.S. and you go, well, how many of those guys would be on Team Canada?
Yeah.
Not too many.
Patrick Kane would be your starting point, but then it gets dicey right away.
But even on the U.S. team, there might be, of all those guys that they named yesterday, how many of those guys, if they were Canadians, would be on the Canadian team?
I would say one, Patrick Kane.
Yeah, like Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
Maybe Jonathan Quick would be your number three goalie.
And maybe Ryan Suter. So you're looking at two or three guys.
Yeah.
Canada, like, I don't know why Canada doesn't win every one of these by a landslide. I mean, Canada should and probably will win this tournament. And if they don't, it'll be because they imploded. So I'd love to go off the board and say that someone could surprise them. But based on what I saw in Sochi, the way Canada dominates teams and can just dictate the play and play the game any way you want, and with the depth that they have, it shouldn't even be close. Canada should be the gold medal winner regardless. And I know Sweden's good and everything, but Sweden was good 2 years ago and they didn't even, that gold medal game, like, it was like, it wasn't even close.
No.
Like, it wasn't even close. I know Nicholas Backstrom didn't play because of the snafu with the drug testing and everything, but I mean, like I said, they could still be playing, and I'm not sure if Sweden would have any more goals than they had in that game. And so I guess, you know, Canada, and then you're looking at a Sweden. Maybe I'll go off the board and say that the young guys will finish third. That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Fun to see that happen. I don't know. I mean, they don't really have a third place game, do they? I mean, they'll just have the semis and then the finals. So. If I'm going to pick a team that will surprise people, I think the young kids will, because they have a team that I think will play a disciplined style and will be able to adapt and will be able to skate with anybody. Actually, will be able to skate better than anybody. And it all depends on their goaltending. And I'm banking on John Gibson going through the playoffs this year and having a great playoff and getting all sorts of confidence and proving that he can play with the best players in the world, and we'll see what happens.
I'm glad you mentioned them, McCann, because I do think those North American kids are the dark horses, because especially they have a lot of players who already project to be elite enough that in four more years they'll be playing for their respective countries. Guys like Jack Eichel, and, well, I mean, if they're even old enough by then,
McDavid and Eichel would be on the Young Stars again.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that says a lot about their level of talent.
Yeah.
Johnny Gaudreau and Dylan Larkin. Dylan Larkin, my boy, my cousin. He's not really my cousin, but
not at all.
And I just picture a first lineup, for example, Johnny Gaudreau on the left side, Nathan MacKinnon on the right, Connor McDavid up the middle. I think that is a line that can give any defense corps in the world trouble, even the most elite defense corps, because their speed and their ability to make plays with the puck on their stick is off the charts. And to me, it was always a disadvantage for the U.S. or for North America about a year ago when they had no goalies at the time that were playing the NHL. They're all AHLers, but now, obviously, like you said, Ken, Gibson played well enough to make the All-Star team this year, and we saw Connor Hellebuyck really cut his teeth nicely with the Winnipeg Jets in the NHL. And Matt Murray. I have a on my bulletin board in the office, I have a bet saying that Matt Murray is going to become a 30-win goaltender in the NHL someday. He's really good. He's got great, big, big, rangy frame. And suddenly that supposed disadvantage, I don't know if it is a disadvantage in a short tournament, especially when we've seen Hellebuyck and John Gibson have played at the World Championship, not just the World Juniors, mm-hmm. the World yeah. Championship against elite NHL caliber competition, and both put up amazing numbers. So if there is that upset team, it's going to be North America. And there's a part of me, I'm a Canadian, but there's a part of me that almost wants to root for North America because it would be such a fun story.
Sure.
Well, I count seven guys on this team. That's a third. That'll be, you know, what amounts to a third of the roster. That would either be slam dunks or very, very close to making the U.S. and Canadian teams. And the five guys I have for the U.S. are Jack Eichel, of course, Johnny Gaudreau, Dylan Larkin, Brandon Saad, and perhaps Seth Jones. I think all of those guys would either be on or very close to being on the American team. And then, you know, with Canada, you know, obviously McDavid would be, if it weren't for the young guns, he'd be on the Canadian team. And I would think Aaron Ekblad would be either on it or very, very close. So that's a third of their team right there that you know can hang with the best players in the world. You know can play with the best players in the world. So, you know, I mean, that's a pretty good contingent. And like you say, I mean, people were saying yesterday that when it's all said and done...
Ken?
We lost
Ken.
Ken just disappeared. He might have been...
He just... watch, and I my give a shit meter for the World Cup is not very high because I think it's I can't get over the fact that it's the world cash grab of hockey and that this is just a cash grab, and until they commit to going to the Olympics, I'm not big on this whole concept.
That other cash grab?
What's that?
The Olympics, that other cash grab?
Yeah, I think I like that other cash
the
grab.
The IIHF yeah. cash grab.
The one that ruins entire cities, but go on.
Yeah, but anyways, I think this is a whole, like my impression of this is it's a fabricated trumped up tournament that really I don't have a lot of time for. But one thing I am looking forward to is watching this team play.
There you go.
All right, well, we'll end it on that very positive note.
Well, continuing with our World Cup discussion, we wanted to bring in an expert, a guy with some international hockey experience. We're very happy to welcome to the podcast a friend of THN, a veteran of the 94 Olympics, the 95 World Championship, ex-NHL goaltender and current Sportsnet analyst, Mr. Corey Hirsch. How's it going, Corey?
It's going good. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and it's a great time to talk. Lots going on this week, the trade deadline, and of course, the World Cup roster announcements, so we definitely wanted to pick your brain on that, first of all.
Yeah. Quite simply, we've seen the initial 16 players for all the rosters now. When it comes to goaltending, Corey, who do you like?
Well, I think when you look at all the teams, you know, Carey Price is the best goalie out there. There's no question about that, even though he's missed the year. I still think he'll be the best goalie at this tournament. You know, what would have been interesting, I had an idea, was I thought that maybe the young team, they could have given him a veteran goalie. So, you know what would have been cool is if, we got a team of, you know, under 23-year-olds, but we'll give him to Luongo. So that would have been, I thought that would have been cool.
Yeah.
And, Corey, did it surprise you to see Corey Crawford finally getting his due? Because he's a guy, you know, when Vezina Trophy voting comes along, All-Star voting, all that kind of stuff, he seems to sort of get no respect. But this time, instead of Roberto Luongo, the guy with Olympic experience, they went with Corey Crawford. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, you know what? No, I'm not surprised. You know, it's been a long time coming. This guy's got two Stanley Cups. And that team doesn't exactly play the most defensive style during the year. And if you've watched him play... he's gotten a lot more athleticism to his game. It is about time, and he has earned it. It's good for him to see. You know, Holtby, we're seeing a bit of a changing of the guard here. And it'd be nice for Lou, but, you know, he's 35 years old. Unfortunately, we'd all love to see him play forever, but he's aging too. So you got to go a little bit younger and get those guys in there and get them the experience too.
Right, and we've been sort of assessing who are the medal favorites? And, you know, obviously Canada's still the defending champion. But we think the Swedes have really gained a lot of ground. Looking at that roster, it looks deadly. And I know you're a guy who might have some bad flashbacks about Sweden going back to 94 and Peter Forsberg, the postage stamp. But is this defense corps, is it even scarier to think about? The Swedish defense corps.
Yeah, I think they probably have one of the stronger groups, but you know, coming over from Sweden, a lot of those guys will be there over the summer. They'll be coming in for the World Cup. It's tough travel to get in here, and then for them to get acclimated, and you know, so they're always having it's tougher for them to come over here than for us to go over there. So I think it's going to be good to see. I think they're going to have a good team. I think they've always had goaltending, so that's not even an issue. You know, I still have to think that Canada's the favorite. They've got a lot of good young players that are starting to really come into the prime. You know, a couple guys having career years. So I still think Canada's the team to beat.
And lastly, Corey, when the tournament was first announced in the format, there was some heat over the sort of gimmicky team breakdown, including Team North America, Team Europe, and I know Mark Streit specifically talked about feeling like he wished he could wear his Swiss colors on his jersey, and it's going to feel weird to not represent anyone, but he did get named to the team. As a guy who's represented Canada and worn that maple leaf, do you think it's going to be hard for Team North America and Team Europe to sort of get up for these games the same way the guys playing for official countries can?
I think at first that's how they'll feel, like once you get there. But once that tournament gets going, they're going to see a lot more countries come together. You're going to see, you know, Slovak, Swiss, Germany. You're going to see, you know, instead of one country, one small country cheering for a team and watching them get beat by everybody, now you have a team that can win. So they're going to have, you know, a bunch of different countries cheering for them and a lot more exposure. So I think at first it may seem like that, but I do believe that as the tournament goes on, they're going to get a lot of love and just going to be make them more competitive, a lot more competitive. So I think it's going to be a really good thing.
Corey, I'm going to put you on the spot. You just said a little bit earlier that Canada's the team to beat. But if there's one team in the tournament that you think could beat Canada in a single elimination gold medal game, who would it be?
Well, I'm still going U.S. Canada. That's the two powerhouses, and I still think that the U.S. has a lot of good players, and the program in the U.S. is getting stronger and stronger every year. So they'll have good goaltending, you know, they'll have good forwards, good defense, be well coached. So if there's one team that can beat Canada, it's going to be the U.S., and it's going to be, you know, how interested are they to winning this tournament? It's going to be more up to the players with that.
That's Corey Hirsch, everybody. Corey, real pleasure to have you on. Hope to have you on again, and love the analysis you're doing on Sportsnet right now, buddy.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, buddy.